Let's continue then. Second presentation by Stefan Westfeld regarding audio plugin signal processing and sound synthesis. Title of the talk being Spectmorph, morphing the timbre of musical instruments.
Okay, welcome to my talk. First, I want to say something about the name. Spectmorph, it's just composed of spectrum and morphing. And we'll see later on why it's called this way. And I speak about morphing of the timbre of musical instruments. So the goals for Spectmorph. I wanted to build timbre models of recordings. So I wanted to give the software recordings of a trumpet and build a model how a trumpet sounds like. Or give it recording of a pan flute and build a model how a pan flute sounds like. And once this is done, I wanted to be able to combine the analysis data. So I can take the analysis data of the trumpet and pan flute to build a sound that starts from a trumpet and ends in a pan flute. Also, it should be possible to create hybrid instruments which sound somewhat like a cello and somewhat like an organ, or allow combining multiple instruments. One goal was that everything should be real-time capable, so you can play on a MIDI keyboard and generate the sound live. So Spectmorph is implemented in C++, and it's open source. If you make music with Spectmorph, I wanted that the composer chooses whatever tool is good for the composer. So for Linux, this means we have LV2 plugins, for instance, for Arduo or Qtractor. We have VST plugins, for instance, for Bitwig. We have a Beast plugin, and we have a Jack standalone client. Also, I ported the VST plugin to Windows and macOS. Next release will have it. So whatever the composer uses could be Cubase on Windows or something. The basic analysis synthesis strategy is spectral modeling synthesis by Smith and Sarah. So I didn't invent that algorithms. The idea is that you split the sample into small frames and then build a model of the spectrum of each frame. So what Spectmorph does for analysis is it splits the signal into frames, uses windowed frames, and then it computes the Fourier transform of each frame. And then it decomposes this spectrum into two components. One is the deterministic part, which is a number of sine waves. Then if you add them together, you get most of the signal. And then there is a rest, which is here called ET. So we, for each frame signal, we look at which sine components do I need with amplitudes, frequencies, and phases. And we model what remains if we do that. So why is that a good idea? You can see that if we look at one such analysis frame, so one short part of the signal, then it's almost periodic. This means that we can use periodic functions like sine functions to get most of it right. So all we need is some amplitudes, some frequencies, and some phases for the sine functions. And if we add up all the sine functions, we get almost a frame signal. So where do we get the amplitudes, frequencies, and phases from? if there is a sine function in the input, then there will be a peak in the spectrum. So what we do is simply we look at the peaks in the spectrum, and then we can, in the spectrum, determine the frequencies, amplitudes, and phases of the sine components. And if we do this, here I should be going, this is the original spectrum, and this is the spectrum of the sine frequencies that SpectMorph uses. So I go back, this is the original spectrum. We go to the peaks, we use sine functions to model the peak, and then we get the green spectrum. And you see, this green spectrum sounds almost the same. That's the similarity we had before. With the sine functions, I can produce something that looks almost the same and sounds almost the same. And once we have done this, we have a good model how an instrument sounds, and we can subtract the green spectrum out, and then we will have the black spectrum. That is whatever remains if we subtract the sine components out. With whatever remains is modeled as noise. So we simply divide the spectrum into 32 noise bands, and for each band we store the average level. The choice of the bandwidth is modeled after human perception. And that is the spectral model I use for describing how, for instance, a pan flute sounds like at this point in time. Okay, for the synthesis, we have to do the reverse. We have some amplitudes, frequencies, and phases of the sine components, and we want a time signal. And synthesis works by overlap add, so we use small r's, the synthesis frames, and add them together. And it works with one single inverse FFT. So we have the spectrum, we put in some peaks, we put in some noise, we use one inverse FFT, and we have the signal. And this is very efficient. Oops, some humor. Ah, yeah. Also, we do not use the original phases. We reconstruct the phases. And I shall explain this part of the synthesis. We have already synthesized one previous frame. This had three components, three frequencies, F star 1, 2, 3. We want to synthesize the current frame, which also has a three frequency component. And what we do is we look which match to the previous frames. And then we simply, for F1, we simply look at the phase of F star 2, and we try to make the actual phase fit to the last phase. So also phi 3 is reconstructed from phi star 3, and F2 has no partner in the other frame, so we start with a phase of 0. So we use the frequency similarity to determine which components continue in the current frame, and then we can reconstruct the phases. And we can do this because the phase is usually inaudible. So if you have a trumpet signal with some phases, and you reconstruct phases and use the same amplitudes, frequencies, but different phases, then it will sound the same, usually. You can hear it on speakers, for instance, the difference. But most of the time, we can do this. Okay, it's now for the Now for the core part, how do we do morphing? The input for the morphing of two instruments is summarized here. We have two sources, source A and source B. And we have, for each of these sources, amplitudes and frequencies. And then we also have noise values. I use superscript alpha and beta to show which source this number is from. And what we need to do, we take some control parameter, which is lambda, with a range from 0 to 1. And what we need to do is we need to create, for the output, frequencies, amplitudes, and noise bands. If we have done this, then basically the morphing is complete. It's done. Let's look at the noise bands. For the noise bands, we simply compute each band separately. So we take the first noise band of source A and the first noise band of source B, combine them, and so on. And we use this linear interpolation. So if you take a lambda value of zero, then this is just noise B is the value from source A. If you take a lambda value of one, then it's just noise B is the value from source B. And if you take 0.5, for instance, then it's half of source A and half of source B. There are 32 noise bands, and we combined each noise band with a noise band of the other source. For the sine components or partials, we have one important problem to solve. The problem is that in source A, we have some frequencies. And in source B, we also have some frequencies. And the first step is to figure out which frequency of source A will be morphed with which frequency of source B. So we want to compute like these arrows. And to do this, we use the following algorithm. First thing, each partial is assigned at most one. So if we have assigned something from source A to something of source B, then it will remain that way. Also, we start with the louder partials. So if a partial is clearly audible in source A, then it's important that it gets a good match in source B. Again, we use frequency similarity to match source A and source B. And if our recording has a fundamental frequency of 440 Hz, then we use half that value as maximum difference. So if two frequencies differ more than 220 Hz, then we will not assign them. And finally, if we do this, we take the louder partials, we look what we can assign. We will have some partials that have been assigned and some other partials that haven't been assigned. First part is the amplitudes. If we have two partials that have been assigned, we simply use the same linear formula that you have seen before. So it works the same as with noise. If lambda is zero, just the amplitude of the partial of source A. If lambda is one, just the amplitude of source B. And if lambda is 0.5, then just we add them together and take the average. The remaining partials, we have some partials which haven't been assigned. So if one source contains a frequency that is loud but that isn't been assigned, then we combine it with an amplitude of zero in the other source. So it's being faded out as we morph to the other source. Alternatively, we have implemented DB linear morphing, which means we convert the amplitude to the dB value. We do the morphing on the dB value and we convert it back. That's because dB values is closer to how humans perceive loudness. And next slide is the frequencies. We could do actually the same like we did before. So we just linearly interpolate the frequencies between both sources, and partials that didn't get a partner in the other source just keep their frequency. So if there is a frequency of 800 hertz in one source and you morph it with another source which doesn't have that component, it just stays at 800 hertz. However, this is wrong in some cases. So we have the case where one partial that is clearly audible and that is very loud gets assigned to one partial which is almost not audible and has a very different frequency. And if we were to move these, morph these like that, then the frequency would get drawn towards the partial with a weaker amplitude. So although we wouldn't hear it in one source, still the source during morphing would make the result for the source where it's clearly audible not so good. So it this is the reason why what Speckmorph does is not the first strategy, but it's it uses a strategy where if one partial is louder than the other, then the louder partial has more influence on the frequency. Yeah, it's in the paper, so I didn't put it here. But at this point, we are basically done with most of what I wanted to achieve. So we have analysis, which builds a model of how the instruments sound like. We have synthesis, we can go back. And we have morphing, which takes two instruments and creates a sound that is morphed between the two. So what remains is the more than two instrument part. Let's assume we have four sources. We have source A, source B, source C, and source D. And what we want to have is how does it sound at that point R, resulting sound, somewhere in the grid. How do we do that? So we can, turns out, do it very simply with what we already have. So we have four instruments. And what we do is we use not one control parameter, but two. We use X, the X position of R, and Y, the Y position of R. And then we can morph A and B using control parameter X, and we get AB. We can use a morph C and D using the control parameter X, and we get CD. And finally, we can morph A and B, and AB and CD with a control parameter of Y, and we get R. So we can reduce our problem for morphing source four sources to just doing three times the linear morphing with two sources. Okay. So I think I'll start. Oh no, we don't have. We could have sound, but I think we don't. So before I get to the thing, we still have some time. So I'll try to show you what it sounds like. So I show you three samples. One is alto flute, one is violin, and then one is transition from alto flute to violin. Okay, and the same again with two other samples. So we have here oboe. Trumpet. And the morph. Okay, so we still have some time, so I can say something about the plugin. The plugin is semi-modular. That means on the left side, you see these operators, and you can have 1, 2, or 10 of these. On the right side, you have the output, but you always have one output. And in the linear operator basically combines two sources. So here you have pan flute and Mirko, which is tenor I recorded. And in this case, we have the LFO, which is at the top, and it controls the morphing. So if you would listen to this, it would just go back and forth between pan flute and Mirko and pan flute and Mirko and so on. But the control input also could be from your sequencer. So you could use, for instance, Ardour or Q-Tractor to automate the morphing. And on the right side, there is some things that can be done after morphing. We have implemented a unison effect, which just plays the same signal five times, for instance, with slight detuning, which makes the sound more fat, and we have RDSR envelope, which can be applied after morphing, portamento and vibrato. And of course, the risk is if you listen to the original or to the demos I gave, sounds very natural. But if you use one of these effects, it sounds better in some ways, but it's also less natural. So I come to the conclusions. Okay, morphing using spectral modeling, like described before, works for many, many, many musical instruments. SpectMorph currently ships with 14 different instruments, but it works for many, many, many cases. However, I should say that some sounds are not usable for this method or don't work well. One instance or one example is if the peaks in the spectrum come too close, then this strategy of simply detecting the peaks and substituting with sine values will not work very well. So usually if you take natural instruments, it will be fine. If you take synthetic instruments, some will work, but others won't. Also, transients are problematic. So if you have a sudden change in the signal, for instance, a piano which is silent, and then if you hit the key, it will be very loud almost immediately. Then our spectral model will assume that during one frame, the components, the sine components, will be equally loud, but that will not be the case. They will be silent before the attack and loud after, but we average this. Also, during playback, we only can play back sounds which are smoothly changing, because during one synthesis frame, we always assume that one partial has the same amplitude at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. So what happens typically with transients is they get blurred. So it will sound somewhat like a piano, but at the attack position, it will be blurred. Finally, one thing about performance. The morphing and the synthesis are relatively cheap, so you can do real-time synthesis of many, many, many voices. You can do like 100 voices at the same time playing something. Of course, it depends on the note. If you have a low note with many partials, then it will take more CPU time than a high note which has only 10 partials or something. Okay, so I think that was everything I wanted to say. Thank you for your interest.
Thank you for the presentation. No time for questions now, sorry. But you probably can find Stefan around.